When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. If you are like us and you scan the news pretty frequently, then we're sure you are already well aware that there is a nationwide epidemic, apparently, of people pretending to play the violin. That is a true story, but it's...
I've got to say, though, the one thing that bugs me about, like, some films, even if the production value is super high, pantomiming of playing instruments is almost always very bad. Have you noticed that, guys?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's true.
And, I grew up playing the violin, so it vexes me when I see someone shredding on the violin in a movie and just clearly not moving their fingers in the right way at all. And I imagine this would be the same thing with these fraudulent buskers.
It's the same thing with almost any specific physical skill when you see it in a film. Often, if it's not an action scene, then experts will be driven crazy watching someone act it out, right? That's why the good move for a lot of films is to teach the actors how mm-hmm. to at least play parts of a song or instrument, and then just do the cutaway to the hands and boom, boom, boom. But we're not talking about...
Wait. Yeah. The Jamie Foxx performance, what was the movie?
Ray Charles
documentary, biopic. He biopic, learned all that stuff. That's how you do it. Filmmakers listening.
Yes. So did the dude that played Eddie Munson in Stranger Things when he did the Master of Puppets scene. There's video of him learning to play that. So it really makes a huge difference, even if it wasn't actually his audio.
And then there was that other one. There's that other, there are numerous examples. Send your favorite. For now, we just want to give a special shout out to all the people actually busking by playing a violin. We also want to give a shout out to the sea floor and everything holy about it. You'll see what we mean. We want to give
it. That was a nice tease.
We want to give a shout out to the terrifying rise of pre-crime, which is probably going to happen now. We predicted it. And as we said earlier, it's sad, but usually when we predict a bad thing happening, we tend to be correct. Just once we want to predict a good thing, but, you know, hope springs eternal, especially if you are someone playing the lottery in the United States today. Segway!
Oh, the luck is in your favor, except it's not ever, because that's not a thing. Well, maybe it is. Maybe luck is a thing.
I heard the lottery once described as a tax on people who are bad at math.
Well, kind of. But as we're going to learn in this this segment, let's call it, we're going to learn that the lottery can be a fun and good thing. Mm-hmm. And here's why. If you like chicken fingers, you're going to love this story. Shout out to the guys over at This Is Important. They are the reason I even know about the chain we're going to discuss today. Today's story comes out of CNN, and it is about a certain franchise owner, a company owner, that purchased lottery tickets for the Mega Millions lottery for all 50,000 of his employees.
Wow.
A good, happy, nice story. So, what? Really? Yes. Let's dive in.
Where's the twist in the darkness? I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop.
The twist in the darkness. Ben already kind of hinted at, but we'll get into it really fast. So as of yesterday, Tuesday, July 26th, the lottery, the Mega Millions lottery jackpot hit $810 million. That's a lot of money. So a gentleman named Todd Graves, who is the founder of a little place called Raising Cane's, this is a chicken finger restaurant. If you like chicken fingies, this is a place to go. If you don't like chicken fingies, stay far away, because that's all you got.
All they've got.
are they tendies as well? What's the?
I think they might be tendies. Yeah.
Okay.
Tendies, fingies, yeah. Strips.
No nuggies. Yeah.
No nugs. No nugs.
You can cut a fingie into fourths and then you get your nuggies.
There you go. Gotta be the change.
DIY.
Be the
DIY
change.
Nuggies. Yeah.
Seriously, I went on their website. It's literally chicken fingers, some fries. Mm-hmm. I think there might be coleslaw involved if you get one specific thing.
There's coleslaw.
And a sauce.
There's Texas toast.
Oh, you're
There's
right.
Texas and toast as well.
Cane sauce.
That look like little hot dog buns.
Mm-hmm. And cane sauce is the big. But you know what? I respect it. Matt, I respect it because at some point they said, we're going to focus on one thing and we're going to nail it.
And do it good.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. I respect it.
I love
it. I'm not necessarily given to it. But this was just this past Monday, right? And as you were saying, it's over $800 million. And I guess $800 million was the threshold for the head guy of this company to say, all right, I'm going to drop, what, 50 grand? Get everybody a $1 ticket?
Oh, no. This is 100 grand. So these are Mega Millions cost $2 to buy. That's the one with the old Powerball, right? Five regular old numbers and then one Powerball.
Mm-hmm. And you can play whatever numbers you want, or you can just get them to randomly generate numbers for you as well, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to use cash, by the way. You cannot use a credit card to buy these tickets.
Right.
And this person, Todd Graves, founder of this place, did indeed spend $100,000 to buy 50,000 tickets. And the concept here was, if anyone in the company won this lottery through one of these tickets, then all of the 50,000 employees would share this money, which is really, really nice. A cool idea. Again, I think this is like one of the best ideas that I've heard. Back in the day, we used to pool our money at Ye Old How Stuff Works, and we would buy lottery tickets. And if any one ticket won within the pool, everybody who played gets to share the winnings. But we did that internally. We spent our own money. In this case, it's a company owner, you know, shelling up their own cash as a possible benefit for the entirety of the company, which is just really cool.
And you know what I think is interesting about that is that in our situation, which is common to many workplaces, at least in the States, in our situation, there was some psychology at play because you would have, you know, you got some change, you got a couple bucks or whatever. You don't want to be, even if you never ordinarily gamble, you don't want to be the one person who wasn't on the list. And now everybody you work with, except for you, is a f***ing millionaire. You know what I mean? It's like the risk aversion gets switched. So now the founder, Graves, has done something really interesting. He's basically giving everybody $2 and the chance to have much more. So you don't have that same fear motivator. I think that's cool. I think it's a neat gesture, unless there's like more to the story.
It's a bold move on his part too. Cause if, you know, if there is a win, he's going to be out an entire workforce. You know, I mean, that's
no,
presumably. There's caveats. Okay.
This is why. Okay. So when you win a large lottery like this, you have two options.
Yes.
Especially here in Georgia. And I'm pretty sure it's for every place that plays this Mega Millions lottery. Mm-hmm. You can either take payments that will be sent to you, like kind of like a paycheck, basically, and they increase in amount over time to adjust for inflation. But it would just be, you'd be getting smaller, much, much smaller payments over time. Or you can cash out. And you just take a huge cash sum. And at that point, the full thing, the full amount is taxed. So the estimated cash value of that $810 million jackpot from yesterday was, in fact, around $470.1 million, at least according to CNN. And that means if you divide that up by the 50,000 employees that would be getting a share, you get around $9,400 for each individual person.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Which
I'm also bad.
That's no small sum, right? My goodness, $9.4 grand just as an extra thing coming to you. That would be amazing, right? But it's not the same as everybody's like, all right, I'm out of here. No more raising this cane. I'm gonna go to Chick-fil-A, I guess. No, I don't know.
How dare you?
Presumably,
if Cane's pays you, how dare you go to Chick-fil-A? Judas, I say.
Well, they have more than one sauce. I mean,
They do. I like the Polynesian sauce. You can actually buy that bottle that the at Kroger around here, which I always thought was
You guys like the tang of homophobia, is what it sounds like.
Live for it. No, very streamlined operation. They do say my pleasure too much. That weirds me out. But no, I got a question. So, I mean, is the idea? Yeah. Ooh. The idea here, I guess, is that, you know, with 50,000. Tickets in the game, you know, you raise your odds, I guess. If and were they all randomly generated? Is that how they played it, or what was the idea? And what is the logistics of buying 50,000 lottery tickets with cash as a single human being? How do you even get them?
Yeah, I don't have all of that information. All we know from that CNN article is that it was difficult to buy 50,000 lottery tickets.
Oh, I see. Now he tweeted that. Yeah. He said it's harder than you think. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm assuming it was through some kind of cashier's check. I'm imagining, because that whole thing's got to be weird. You certainly do kind of raise the odds, except for, as we discussed before, and Ben, I'm going to lean on you for this just a bit. Every time you play, especially if you're randomly generating numbers, you have the same odds every time you play the lottery, essentially, is what I'm saying.
Right.
And it's 1 in 300-something million, some ridiculous number. A crazy low chance that you would actually win this lottery, no matter how many times you play.
It's weird. Okay, so maybe a way to explain it is, you know how gravity is just a little bit different if you're in very, 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 very elevated places, but it's a very, very, very small change. You can use that analogy to think about the way the lottery works. So if your chance is, for instance, 1 in just 29.2 million, that's a number I saw in a statistics article on this, then you can up your odds by buying 10 tickets. You spent way more money than you meant to. And in exchange for that, your odds go from 1 in 29.2 million to 10 in 29.2 million. It's like it does have an effect, but it is so small, you could only call it technically improving your chances. It's kind of like how if you're running late and you try to speed on the interstate, you can shave a couple minutes off, but you're probably still going to be late. If you're already like more than 15 minutes late, it's probably not going to happen. You know what I mean?
Got you. So So statistically, you're not really raising your odds, even though you technically are.
You are a little bit. Yeah, you are a little bit, but it's not significantly. To do it significantly, you would have to, you know, buy millions of lottery tickets. But to this point, I think where Noel's going with this is...
Well, you'd also have to make sure that none of those sets of numbers are repeating, right?
In order
to really increase your odds.
Mm-hmm. But with that...
But if they were randomly generated, chances are they wouldn't be.
Right. That's what I was going to say. If they're randomly generated, they're not... the odds of those same numbers being randomly generated in that string, that is winning just another crappier lottery, basically, in terms of the odds, right?
Yes.
So I think it's... I mean, I still like it's a good question. 50,000 tickets, to what degree does that increase your odds, right? If it's one iteration or one instance each, still, I don't think, you know, if you're comparing millions to tens of thousands, it's not a huge bump. But it is still a really nice gesture, right?
It's a super nice gesture.
Yeah. And not to be cynical about it, but it's a damn fine PR move for a small company that's, you know, a single owner who presumably treats his employees better than, you know, larger fast food chains. There aren't infinite numbers of these. There isn't one in Georgia or in Atlanta currently. There's a limited number of them. And so I think it's more of that, like, see, we take care of our people. We're all in this together. You know, it's definitely, I mean, obviously it got picked up, you know, far and wide, this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really did. You're correct. It's a great PR move. Sadly, guys, it is Wednesday, July 27th, as we record this, and nobody won. Not a single person won the major jackpot, all six numbers. And by the way, according to AP, the chances of winning all six or getting all six numbers correct is 1 in 302.5 million. Which seems like
to millions.
Lot.
Yeah.
Thinking it's a lot. Yeah.
But that means, you guys, in between the time that we are recording this right now and the time that this comes out on Monday, next Monday, which is today when you're hearing this, somebody may have won that lottery. And the founder of Raising Cane's has said he's going to play again and he's going to keep playing until he wins, or until someone wins. Until someone wins. Because imagine dropping $100,000 twice a week.
It's a lot of chicken fingers. It really is.
It's so many chicken fingers. All right, guys, we don't have to talk about this too much more, but there are a couple places you can go to learn more about the lottery. Not long ago, we talked about, I think it was a woman who dreamed about numbers and then played the lottery and won. It was a while ago.
Yeah.
But we brought up some of the same things I wanted to bring up today, but I don't think it's necessary. You can go to every state's lottery website and check out. Usually they have a section called Where the Money Goes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to galottery.com, you can navigate to their Where the Money Goes section, and you can actually see how much money is spent on, you know, employees who work for Georgia Lottery, on their overhead, basically, how much they spend on their staff with the money that's brought in by these lottery tickets. It shows you how much money is paid out to players and how much money is paid to retailers, so people actually sell the lottery tickets, and how much money actually goes to education. And in the state we live in Georgia, in fiscal year 2021, Georgia Lottery gave $1.54 billion in funds to education, which includes things like the Hope Scholarship that allows children to go to college here in Georgia. And every state has things like the Hope Scholarship, not necessarily the exact same thing, but things like that when it comes to funding education in their state. Texas is the only place that was really weird. I couldn't find exact numbers on the Texas lottery.
Stuff they want you to know.
Matt, what is it that causes the pot to get so much bigger when we have these historically large lottery pots?
More people play?
Yeah.
Right?
That's it.
I mean, because as that number gets bigger, more people are like, all right, I've reached my threshold of going, might as well waste $5, $10, whatever it is, $2.
Feedback loop. And the cost,
that makes sense.
Cost risk analysis or the cost benefit analysis changes because the infinitesimal chance of winning is more attractive as there's more and more stuff. And if you're listening and if you won by the time this comes out, congratulations. Just give you a couple quick tips. Don't tell anyone. Don't tell us. Don't tell your family. Honestly, I'm going to say it. This might be a hot take. I would think very carefully about telling your romantic partner. Also, don't tell your children. Literally, omerta for the rest of your life. That's the only way to do it. Okay.
Make a trust fund for each kid, put most of it in there, and then enjoy what you got.
Yeah. Live then, like a secret drug lord, like Gus Fring or something. You know, you just got to really,
It's such a weird curse to all of a sudden have that much
maintain
money.
Normalcy.
Yeah. Don't quit your job. Yeah. You know what I mean? Keep showing up to work for at least like a year. Seriously, I know it seems like a long time because you're a billionaire now, or you will be. Mm-hmm. And then also, obviously, don't take the lump sum at all. Don't do it unless you have to.
Yeah. Speaking of billionaire, the Friday drawing that's occurring, you know, again, that just occurred when you're hearing this, it is over $1 billion.
Yes.
Or right about $1.02 billion, which is nuts.
And this has been our giving advice for things that will never happen segment.
Well, statistically, it will happen to someone because someone will win.
I guess so. What was the most recent payout? It wasn't insane. It was just a couple mil. Like, what's the largest historical lottery payout that's ever happened?
I think it was $1.5 billion that was won in 2018.
Individual? It can be. They can be split sometimes, too.
Yeah, but that's the... That's the amount, right? That's the prize amount. And then the cash out amount, like for this one that's happening, it's valued at $1.02 billion, but the actual cash out number is $602.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Yeah. So may fortune favor the bold, right? You know, insert different Hunger Games quotes here, but don't let the money change you. Listen, folks, a great amount of fame or success, financial, social, whatever you want to call it, it doesn't necessarily make people bad. It just allows them to be more concentrated, transparent versions of who they were in the beginning. So don't let it touch you, you know?
And if the townspeople start approaching you with rocks in their clenched fists, run away.
There you go. Guys, next time, maybe even a full episode. There's a great story out of the Griot, and it's discussing how much the state lottery board makes for every $1 they spend on ads. So like the lottery board takes in around $128 for every $1 they spend on ads, which think about that. The amount of gains you get for putting out just promotion for your lottery. Hey, come on, play the lottery. Mm-hmm. You might win. You roll the dice. You might win, and they make $128 back for everyone they spend. You know, that's
let's
nuts.
Let's do just a lottery episode. Let's do it. The time has come. Mm-hmm. I'll gamble on that. I bet it'll be interesting. That's what I'm betting.
Me too. All right. We're going to leave for now and hear a word from our sponsor, maybe the lottery, and we'll be right back with more strange news.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix.
Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life.
At least not the ones you're thinking of. But they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home.
Like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control.
Their expertly trained technicians may not know true crime, but they know their local pest pressures.
And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good.
Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere.
So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
And we've returned with some strange news from the bottom of the sea. To take a quick diversion, have you guys seen the movie Sing? Or Sing 2, perhaps, with CGI animals that sing like popular songs. I only bring this up because I recently watched Sing 2 and was very pleasantly surprised to hear a song pretty prominently featured by a little remembered band called Mercury Rev, who, in my opinion, sort of had that Flaming Lips sound, that like post, you know, Clouds Taste Metallic Flaming Lips sound, like the Soft Bulletin era. They had that sound on lock before the Flaming Lips ever even, you know, touched it. And they had the same exact producer, a guy named Dave Fridman. So I like the Flaming Lips. I like that era, but I really feel like they kind of ate Mercury Rev's lunch. And there is a song in Sing 2 that's quite beautiful called Holes. And I was really just tickled when it came on. So yeah, this is about holes at the bottom of the sea. There's an article on Vice that cited a report from the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, a federal agency that studies weather and the sea and things like that. This is specifically a wing of NOAA that does oceanic exploration. And they had this to say via a tweet. On Saturday's dive, we saw several sublinear sets of holes in the seafloor. The origin of the holes has scientists stumped. The holes look human-made, but the little piles of sediment around them suggest they were excavated by something. What's your hypothesis? And it's true. There are these neat and tidy little evenly spaced out rows of holes. And I learned a new word, by the way, from this NOAA reporting. It's called Lebensborn, or Lebensborn, which sounds vaguely German to me, which is a term for biological formed structures, things like holes or burrows or mounds and then the like. But here's the thing. They could have been made perhaps by some sort of crab or lobster or something with sort of like a probing kind of like pointy, you know, appendage. But upon further exploration and close-up photography, again, this is over a mile under the ocean. Sorry, I haven't told you. It is in the Mid-Atlantic Ridge area of the ocean, which is deep, 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 dark ocean, which is essentially might as well be space. I mean, the reason they're exploring this stuff is because it holds all kinds of as of yet undiscovered things. Certain species of sea creature. Ben, you had mentioned that you went down a sea creature rabbit hole recently because of some of the new ones that have been discovered from this very type of exploration,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Right now, the weird thing, and I think I mentioned this before, the human species actually knows more about the surface of the moon than it does about the oceanic depths, you know, once you get to the very bottom. And so if you are a fan of cryptids, if you hold out hope that there are more creatures yet to be discovered, then the deep sea is one of the places to start. There's actually the one that I was talking to you about that messed up my research. Some of the research I was doing this afternoon, I totally stopped and learned too much about a rare tentacle-looking creature that scientists just discovered at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. I'll throw it in the chat so you guys can get a little grossed out as we're talking about this. But yeah, you're right.
I think
yeah.
I saw it vaguely extraterrestrial in appearance, yeah. Right?
It's like someone grabbed the top of an octopus or squid and then just sort of taffy pulled it out into this long trail and then said, okay, yeah, that's fine. It's a sea pen. These are real things. Sea pens are already a known thing, but this is like a new, possibly a new species. But all of this, just to say there are continually strange discoveries being made at the ocean depths. And that's why, at least with this story, Noel, I would totally not be surprised if there's a mundane explanation, but I would also totally not be surprised if it was something brand new, because these do look, they're occurring at a regular interval. Like they look purposely perforated. There we go.
Guys, everything you're saying about this creature, it's giving me flashbacks. I just watched Nope. No spoilers. But I just watched the movie Nope. And have you guys seen it yet?
I'm very excited to see it now. I talked to another friend today who saw it and said they absolutely loved it. So looking forward to it.
I haven't seen it, but you know me. I read everything about it, so I know what happened.
I haven't. I like Peele enough to not spoil his stuff for myself, because he's sort of like, he's like Shyamalan, but like, you know, good. And he hasn't outstayed his welcome. Yeah, Shyamalan was good when he was good, but I just think he's kind of like, his twists have gotten a little bit repetitive and predictable. Whereas I think Peele has always managed to surprise me. Really liked Get Out, obviously, and Us. But here's the thing. There was actually another... Oh, sorry. I sort of backtracked a little bit to describe where this was. This discovery was found, and I didn't mention what was said about they could have been made by, you know, certain types of sea creatures, but there's blind lobsters that live down there. It's something called squat lobsters, different types of, you know, subterranean, deep sea-dwelling crustaceans that have little pokey diggy things. But upon close-ups and further inspection, there weren't any signs of living organisms inhabiting the holes, the researchers said. They go on, whether the holes were connected beneath the sediment surface was not visible. We hope that future studies of the Lebensborn, forgive me if I'm mispronouncing that, we report here will resolve the mystery of what created them. And this has actually happened before. In 2003, scientists investigating the same area published a study in the journal Frontiers in Marine Scientists, and they found similar types of, you know, anomalous kind of holes. They were described as raised sediment around these holes that indicated they could have been dug out by deep sea crustaceans, like I said, or perhaps excavated by animals living inside the seafloor. But the authors were left without a definitive answer, and we're basically just as stumped as the scientists with NOAA have been about this current run. So I don't know. I like the idea that it could be some mysterious creature that's doing it. I like the idea that the idea that it's man-made is interesting to me, and that was actually in the headline for the Vice article by Becky Ferreira, which I think is a little bit of a bait and switch, but they did say it, look human made. They didn't really go back to justify that or quantify that at all. Sort of an odd thing to say without any context, but definitely got my imagination running wild.
And we're not talking about somebody diving down there and, you know, putting holes
and
in
just popping
some
one
kind
at
of tool,
for
right?
Like miles. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Unless you're James Cameron or, you know, like the government, you can't get down here. There's no casual exploring the seafloor of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge.
I will warn folks, mainly because it gives me an excuse to use this term, this word I never get to use, if you experience trypophobia or a fear or disgust of patterns of holes, this may not be the article for you. God, I love the English language. There's so many words that we'll never use. Like,
yeah, thankfully, these holes are all totally. Thankfully, these holes are all in a line and they're not like clusters. Those are the ones that really set off people with that condition. Mm-hmm. There's actually an episode or a season of American Horror Story, which is not always great, but there is a season where it revolves around a character's deepest fears, and trypophobia is one. And they, you know, in typical Brad Falchuk and whatever that other guy's name is fashion, they go way over the top in depicting what the people are seeing who are freaked out by holes. Pretty gross.
What if you got a little thalassophobia, huh?
Which one is that? Let's go through more phobias. Let's do some phobia porn.
I think that's the deep water one.
Chlorophobia is fear of clowns. But I think if you don't have that condition, if you're a deep sea investigator and you see this trail of holes and all of a sudden you see a clown, you get chlorophobia pretty quick. Just standing there, you know, arms akimbo, and it waves to you, I think you'll flee, right? Deep sea clowns? Why is that not a thing yet?
Oh, God. Deep sea clowns with wings. That would freak me out. I have ornithophobia.
Deep which is, sea fear clowns. Of birds. I don't know why that feels like a Lounge Singer number to me. Maybe in a David Lynch film.
Yeah, and also super producer Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson, pointed out that Holes on the Ocean Floor would be a really good name for like an emo or a post-rock type band.
I think post-rock,
steal it. Yeah, I think post-rock is great. Don't steal it, no. Conspiracy realists. Let Alexis have this.
Codenamed Doc is going to invite us to the show next week, she said. So
yeah, I'm hoping for some very plodding, slow instrumental jams. Okay.
You'll just have to wait and see.
Yes. Deal, Doc. I'm going to buy some shoes specifically for gazing at your show.
Let's not get it twisted. That would be more of a post-rock shoegaze kind of situation. Yeah. They're not mutually exclusive, but they also don't always have to belong together.
Yeah, it's a Venn diagram. That's what I'm getting. I love specific it. Shoes. You know, they need the top of the shoe needs to be interesting. Exactly.
Like clown shoes. What about clown shoes?
Not a clown shoe guy. My feet are weird enough. Yeah, my feet are basically hands, so I don't want to add more attention.
It's more shoe to look at, you know, is what I say. More shoe to look at. But then also, you'd have to stand really far away from your massive pedal board, you know, and it'd be really hard to hit those buttons with the tip of that giant shoe, which get pretty broad at the top. You'd be like slamming all three pedals, which actually might be desirable, you know, if you're one of those, you know, pedal heads. Anyway, this is an interesting one. Thank you all for chatting it through and indulging the speculative kind of bent in this story. But I look forward to hearing more, you know, because these scientists still seem to be kind of baffled, and hopefully they'll come to some conclusion and share with the class. But in the meantime, let's take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, and be back with one more piece of strange news.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah. Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix.
Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life.
At least not the ones you're thinking of. But they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home.
Like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control.
Their expertly trained technicians may not know true crime, but they know their local pest pressures.
And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good.
Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere.
So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
And we've returned. So, best of luck to the good people at Canes, and best of luck to the scientists doing tremendous, mysterious work there at the ocean floor. Our last story is a prediction that has come to pass. For many years, when we talk about big data, whatever your preference may be, we've often pointed out the imperfections of applying technology to predicting the actions of human beings. We've also, not for nothing, sort of internalized the cautionary tale of Minority Report. The idea that predicting crime, even when it seems to be accurate, can be dangerous and can have unintended consequences. Well, as we record today, and as you hear this on Monday, it happened. We're at the dawn of pre-crime right now. There's a great study came out of University of Chicago, which is frankly terrifying. These very clever researchers have created an algorithm that, according to them, can predict crime a week in advance with 90% accuracy. That's the headline. Before we go on, do you guys believe it?
What data are they using? What are they feeding into the thing?
Right. The old lambda.
Is it, if it's social media? Well, like really, if it's social media posts that are private somehow, or really, I don't know, maybe they're public posts, but they're just monitoring specific things. I think you could probably predict some mass shooting events if you had the most granular data on everybody.
But, you know, I mean, on social media, everyone's just portraying the rosiest version of their psychopathy. You know, I mean, they want everyone to think they're the best, sweetest, happiest psycho in the world. I mean, nothing on social media is actually should be taken at face value, right? I'm kidding. Obviously, people use it for all kinds of reasons, but it makes me think of there's an Atlanta rapper, and now I'm forgetting his name, but he got wrapped up in some gun charges recently.
Gunna?
I don't remember. I'll figure it out in a second. But the point is, and this might ring a bell for y'all, they used his lyrics as evidence against him,
yeah.
Which obviously isn't the same as pre-crime, but I wonder if you could use that, you know, for as a form of pre-crime, you know, mm-hmm. Someone is rapping about something that maybe is a fantasy, you know, or it indicates where their mind, their headspace is. Maybe that's something you could use someone's art against them.
Well,
it was Young data. Thug,
it's Young by the way.
Young that, Thug, that's right.
There's a great,
Jeffrey.
This mm-hmm. happened to other performers, too, other musicians. There's also a fantastic Key and Peele sketch about this. I will send it to you all if you haven't seen it before.
I remember this.
Yeah. I killed Darnell. Like it's like a 4:35. And it just.
Yes, exactly.
It's, yeah. But it shows that beautifully, right? But this is a good question. Where are they getting the information that they are feeding the algorithm? They are using publicly available data. So this would be reports of crimes. This would be any imaginable demographic metric of a community. And what kind of stuff are we talking about? Just to give you a brief laundry list, this is pulled from the history of the city of Chicago, and they had two broad categories that they were testing the tool against. Once they fed all this junk into it, they wanted to see what they could predict. Their two buckets are, one, violent crimes, homicides, assaults, batteries, you know, all of those, and then property crimes, burglary, theft, grand theft auto, all the hits. And these particular ones were used because they were most likely to be reported to police in those areas. Because as anyone who's lived, you know, on the edges of different things knows, many crimes never have the police involved, right? And it's just sort of understood between the victim and the perpetrator, even when they switch sides in revenge schemes, you know? But they also said, okay, these are going to be reported in urban areas where there is historical distrust and lack of cooperation with Johnny Law. They thought, okay, even if you don't like the cops, you're still going to say, hey, someone stole my car. So we know that because of that, there's a high likelihood that the number of crimes that have occurred in that regard is very close to the number of crimes that are reported, meaning the data is more solid, right? Especially more solid than something like drug crimes or some misdemeanor infractions, because those are prone to what's known as enforcement bias, which is exactly what it sounds like. We don't have to overthink it. So this the PhD senior author of the study, Ishanu Chattopadhyay, and pardon my mispronunciation if I'm getting this wrong, said that this tool is different because it takes in the complex social environment of cities. And it also considers the relationship between crime and the effects of police enforcement. It's pretty smart. So picture yourself playing like SimCity or Civilization or something. It divides the city of Chicago into tiles that are pretty small, about 1,000 feet across, and it predicts crime within those areas instead of relying on traditional boundaries of like neighborhoods or political districts, because those are also subject to bias. It did this in Atlanta, in Austin, Detroit, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Portland, and San Francisco, in addition to Chicago. So they tested this in a couple of different places. And what they found, and what seems to be true, is that they can predict crime about a week in advance. So that, like, about a week in advance with 90% accuracy, they can take what happened in the past, and then through this algorithm, they can run it through this thing with all these other intervening variables, and then it will tell them, like, hey, the specifics are a little tough for me, but they will say something along the lines of, hey, there are going to be X number of cars stolen next week, or something like that. I don't know how predictive they can be or how sophisticated. I don't know if they could say a 2004 green Honda Odyssey, right, with a crappy transmission or anything like that.
Do they have to have info on the people, like specific to the people, like psychological profiles or any information that's specific to individuals? Or is it more big picture and like, you know, like that's a really good point, Ben, Civilization or like SimCity, like a top down kind of view where the individuals are less important than just the way, the complex system of it all kind of.
Yeah.
I don't think it has that, right? We're just talking about the overlay of the city. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. You look at it like a grid, and like, here's when things happen and exactly where within these little specific parts of the city. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's so weird, because really? Ben, I don't see how you can make it actionable. Like, right. Who cares if we know that five cars are going to get stolen in the next 7 days?
Know like, what cars are we, those are? Do we put,
you know,
do
where
we
they
put
talk about this a lot is on The Boys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Boys in that show, that like the Seven, they have these, you know, this department that's looking into crime, and someone makes a comment that they can usually predict a crime like a week or so before it happens. So it's, you know, similar kind of data that they're crunching. It also reminds me of this anime called Psycho Pass that is more about the individuals where they can actually, they're taking measurements of the citizens of Japan's, you know, biometrics of their brains and generating these, they call them cymatic scans that allow them to, with a pretty high degree of certainty, predict who will be potential criminals. You know, criminality potential is the term they use, and they get color coded on a map.
But the dangerous, but
this is not that. Yeah. This is science fiction.
Well, there's something very dangerous with all these things and their historical precedents, right? Law enforcement throughout all civilizations, various versions of law enforcement were attempting to predict crime, and their rubric for this, although it varied widely, it was hardly scientific. And most times it was really rooted in xenophobia, in racism, in some other form of discrimination, right? So the question is, how much of that has descended to this program? And if you look at the research just got published in Nature Human Behavior, and what they found was a twist to the plot, a Shyamalan twist, you could say. And I don't think he's that bad. But they found that this thing could accurately predict crime, especially in Chicago, but it also laid bare some heavy biases in police responses. They found stuff like if you stress the system, that's what the senior author calls it, it requires more resources to arrest more people in response to crime in a wealthy area. And that almost always draws police resources away from areas with lower socioeconomic status. So police are paying more attention to the quote unquote good parts of town. They're also working kind of in response to earlier experiments from Chicago PD or associated with Chicago Police Department. A while back, the Chicago PD tried another algorithm that created a list of people deemed most at risk of being involved in a shooting. And it turned out that over half of the black men in Chicago between 20 and 29 appeared on it. So this is why the people who made this new algorithm, this new AI algorithm, are really concerned that the data that they're using in their model may be biased, which therefore means, to your point, Matt, that the conclusions it creates will be biased. And they also said, just to answer another couple quick questions about how far into the dystopia we are, they also said that the algorithm, the AI, does not identify specific subjects, right? So it's not saying Paul Mission Control Deckant is out on another loose diamond heist over at Zales or whatever is in your neck of the woods, folks. There used to be Shane Company here. The commercials were hilarious. Instead of identifying specific subjects, it identifies potential sites of crime. And they've released the data and the algorithm. They didn't keep it proprietary. They released it into the public sphere because they want other researchers to check out its reasoning, its conclusions. They want to test it. And then one thing that really caught me is I was comparing this to previous kind of DARPA work, or DARPA-sponsored, excuse me, work with creating virtual models of things like Afghanistan or other communities or other areas of the world, you could say. And their idea there, which was pretty like frighteningly successful, their idea was that if you can create a simulated version of a place with enough sophistication, with enough fidelity, if you have enough information about it, then you can plug in changes, right, in your make it upsies universe. And then what happens as a result of that in this virtual environment will be very close to what happens in the real world with the same set of actions. So that's what they have done. They said, we've made this thing that is close enough to the actual city of Chicago or those seven other cities for our purposes, that when we feed it data from the past, it tells us what will happen in the future. Because like a Lovecraftian elder god, it sees beyond time. They didn't say that last part. I added that in for a little bit of editorial, you know, style. But he also said it's not magical. It has limitations, quote, but we validated it and it works very, very well. So if that's what's happening, if we have a kind of a thing that's kind of like a precognitive bloodhound for geography of crime, how far along a slippery slope are we? Do you guys think this would get deployed in other cities or get used past the experimental proof of concept phase? I mean, I think people in the real estate industry would be very interested to have this information.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can imagine that. When it comes to how, like, how much they could charge or how little they should charge for a home, is that what you mean?
Yeah, part of it for the buyers and the sellers. You know, if you know, like, because there are crime ratings, right? Safety ratings, it might be called, by zip code. Maybe that's not the best example. I don't know. It's just like, if you have that statistic, why, what's to stop police from just saying, okay, we're going to pretty much garrison people in these things for a week?
Post
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I don't know here. If that's smart.
Yeah, no, I get it. Or like set up points of entry, you know, like roadblocks, kind of like, you know, I mean, that's, it sort of takes the sport out of it, doesn't it? I don't mean to sound flippant like that. I just, you know, I mean, anyway, yeah.
I'm just going to go back to what my thought in the beginning of this, Ben, and that is if you take this, the models they're creating and the statistical analysis that they're doing, and you combine that with something like Sesame Credit or something that is very closely monitoring social media and purchases and interaction, like interpersonal interaction on that way and generating data set. If you combine those two things, that's when you get actual precog, pre-crime insanity.
Right. You just have to, you know, I was thinking about the same thing, man, because if you look at your phone, a lot of people are listening to this on their phone, right? So you look at your phone right now and imagine it not just as a single invention, but imagine it as a multitude of separate inventions that have been combined to create something amazing. That's how these sorts of innovations occur. That's what precog and pre-crime stuff will be. It'll be like your phone. It'll look like one thing in the end, but it's really going to be a mass, an aggregation of innovations like this. Is this good? Will this maybe save lives? Of course, that's the hope. But that part is up to society at large. And I want to shout out the scientist involved who did excellent work on this study and on this algorithm, because they're incredibly conscientious about this. It's very much a case of them having done everything they can do. You know what I mean? They can't start a vigilante squad and go try to save a Honda Odyssey for some reason. Also, why would you? But yeah.
Why? Yeah, why?
But, but I do think it's worth everybody's time if you're interested in this. I know we have a lot of thoughts on this, folks. Fellow conspiracy realist, I would recommend checking out the study firsthand and then reading what people have written about it. The title is Event Level Prediction of Urban Crime Reveals Signature of Enforcement Bias in U.S. Cities. So they put it in the title. It came out at the very end of June, Nature Human Behavior. That's the journal. Do check it out. Would love to hear your thoughts. Would love to hear your take on Keynes. Would love to hear what you think about the lottery. And again, you know, we want your opinions on what lurks at the ocean's depths. We want you, specifically you, conspiracy realist, no, not that person next to you, you, to write in, be part of a show, join us for our listener mail segment. As a matter of fact, the only person we don't want to hear from, if you recently won a lottery, don't tell us. Keep it secret. Keep it safe. Otherwise, for everybody else, we try to be easy to find online.
Correct. You can find us all over the internet. We are Conspiracy Stuff on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram.
Hey, and if you did win the lottery, why not chip in? Buy about, I don't know, 400,000 copies of our new book, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. We could distribute them across the planet together.
Tired or of hearing about just, it's like it's pledge drive rules, you know. Consider yeah. us like the we're NPR. Just get the book and then we could stop talking about it.
That's it. I'm sorry. You can also reach us by phone. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. Tell them about it, Ben.
That's right. You will hear a hopefully familiar voice. You'll hear a beep that lets you know you're in the right place, and then you're off to the races. You have 3 minutes. Those 3 minutes are your own. We ask only that you do the following, please. Give yourself a cool nickname. Who doesn't love those? Tell us what's on your mind. Let us know if we have your permission to use your name and or voice on air. And most importantly, if your story needs more than 3 minutes, we want to hear the whole thing. Write it out. We read every single email we get. Send us the links, send us the photos, send us the video. Take us to the edge of the rabbit hole and we will see how deep it goes. All you have to do is send us a good old-fashioned email where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off. Starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.